This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/east. Welcome to East Meets West, episode 285. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And something weird's been going on with my internets today.
I think you're being snooped on. It's obviously has all the hallmarks of someone placing a bug.
You think I'm being Snoop Dogg?
Maybe. Maybe you know something you're not supposed to know.
About Snoop Dogg. I don't know much about Snoop Dogg other than he is a fantastic musician.
That's a really good, that's what you should be saying. It's a very good act.
Yeah.
You need to keep that up.
I don't
actually want.
Seems to be improving the bandwidth.
Yeah. Yeah. So just don't talk about Snoop Dogg other than you might know some things.
First rule of Snoop Dogg, don't talk about Snoop Dogg.
And don't call him Snoopy.
No.
Although I used.
Now you've ruined it. See, my video froze as soon as you said that.
I'm sorry. Well, how about if I talk Avengers, since I saw that last week at a screening?
You saw a press screening or something?
So now when they do screenings, it's both a press screening / get your free movie preview screening through your radio station where they give out.
Yeah, it's been that way for quite a while.
I managed to get squeezed into one of those last week. And it was awesome. Oh, my God. It's like Saturday morning with a big punch bowl of Fruit Loops and milk in your lap watching cartoons. Awesome.
That's what I want to hear. I actually own the Avengers in our NSFW show Frame Rate Summer Movie Draft.
Nice. If you like that style of movie, if you like action movies, if you like adventure, superheroes, comic books come to life, you will like the Avengers. If you're boring, you know, anal retentive twat, then perhaps you will not enjoy it.
So you're saying that the only way to be a quality human being is to enjoy this movie? What if I don't like it?
Then there's something deficient in you, and you should probably go see a doctor.
This is a test for you. Wow, so you've really loved it, and it's getting rave reviews.
I will be the first one to say it's not the deepest movie. It's not incredibly cerebral. There are no, you know, incredible character developments throughout the movie, but it is just well done. It's a fun movie. It's like when you go to the theme park, like at Disneyland or Disney World or Great America, you come back out and you say, yeah, I'm glad I went to the theme park. I had fun. You go sit down for 2 hours, you're going to come out and say, yeah, I'm glad I paid money. I had fun. That is the kind of movie it is.
The worrisome thing about that, which I don't believe is true, but that's what people say about Transformers. They're like, oh, of course it's a, you know, horrible plot and there's, you know, there's no story to it, but it's just a thrill ride. You get to see things
up. It's not just a thrill ride. There are moments in it, but it's so well written. It's like when you go to a dialogue heavy movie and you just laugh at the incredible dialogue that's written. I mean, Joss Whedon directed and co-wrote the movie, so there are a lot of Joss Whedon elements, and there are moments that you'll just sit back and laugh uncontrollably at what's presented in front of you. Nothing comes off as, oh, I've really never done this kind of movie before, but I'll try my hand at writing it. In many ways that you see an adaptation being done.
For example, Joss Whedon's Star Trek. What Star Trek is to J.J. Abrams, it seems.
Yes,
like.
But I would say it's much better. I think J.J. Abrams was a little too wedded to making sure that everything would appease, you know, the original Star Trek purists in the way the ship was designed and a lot of the kind of interaction between characters. Joss Whedon is very confident that he will not piss off anyone. He knows this is what people want to see. Because this is what he likes. It's as if someone who grew up their entire lives playing with action figures, like a Captain America action figure, and suddenly as they grew up, they still kept playing with it, but now they can also shoot a movie with it. And it just feels like there's nothing there that feels forced. Everything feels, this is the way an Avengers movie should be.
That's amazing coming from you. Now, some people may not realize this, but it takes a lot to impress Roger. It takes a lot to make Roger say something was okay. So you're like bubbling over with enthusiasm here.
I don't often say this, but when it comes out on Blu-ray, I will buy it on day one.
Why? Okay, how do I avoid the pre-show hype then? Because this happened to me with a Joss Whedon movie just this last weekend. I went to see Cabin in the Woods, and it didn't take much to spoil it for me. And I enjoyed it. I still liked the movie, but I definitely came out going, that was good. And a lot of other people I knew went to see it and came out stunned. They're like, that was amazing. So I don't want to go into the Avengers and then come out going like, I wish nobody would have told me how great it was, because now I feel like, oh, it's all right.
So I think, and this is why I qualified, I mean, in the beginning, that this is still your kind of Saturday morning cartoon developed for adults. You know, if you go in with that understanding, don't go in thinking that this is a Stanley Kubrick take.
Well, no, it's the Avengers. It's superheroes. Yeah. I would never go into a Marvel movie expecting it to be Stanley Kubrick.
Did you like Iron Man 2?
Yes.
Did you like Iron Man 1?
I did.
Did you sit down like, this is a fun movie, I'm glad I paid money to watch it?
I did.
Because that is essentially the same feel that I get, but it's magnified by two times. No, about by five. I would say like all the Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, and the thing is, I liked Captain America. I didn't think it was the best Captain America. There are parts of the movie that I thought could have used some major reworking.
We rented Captain America after it came out of the theaters. We didn't watch it in the theater.
But I can honestly say, Avengers is a movie best seen with a bunch of friends and in the theater where
people
can. Are
you going to go see it again?
Yes.
Really?
I will. Yes.
When?
Just, I don't know. Since I'm going to Hawaii this weekend, I really don't want to go to Hawaii this weekend.
It's so hard.
Well, you know, a bunch of us were going to go watch it together, but I can't.
You can see a movie in Hawaii. I've done
it. I could. But then I would be missing out on the Hawaii experience.
No, that is the Hawaii experience. I actually saw J.J. Abrams' Star Trek in Honolulu, and it was fun. It was fun to be with a bunch of Hawaiians watching a movie.
It's just a very odd thing to say, but sure.
Which island are you going to?
Kauai.
All right, yeah. Your movie choices
are pretty thin.
More limited there.
I was hoping to harpoon a couple of sea turtles or something. Bring it ashore and cook it. No, I know they're protected.
What are you?
And you can't do that.
Loki? What? I don't know. No, it's not Loki, but.
But I was thinking, it's a pretty. If you think about it, turtles are a pretty handy food because they're on their own food receptacle. You could just cook everything in it. You know, it's a nice little animal, shell and all.
The next World of Warcraft, Mists of Pandaria, has a new character Panda. And the pandas all live on the back of a giant turtle that's swimming around in the ocean.
I've never heard of that before. What happened to the elephants, by the way?
What elephants?
You know, the whole thing about the Indian, is it Hindu myth where mythology where the world is held aloft on the back of three giant elephants?
This isn't the world. This is just an island. It's just a huge turtle. The turtle's is so old that, you know, it's got dirt on its shell and trees growing out of it, and the pandas live there.
Good for pandas, I guess. I hope they have a harmonious and very...
It's good until the Alliance ship, Zeppelin, crashes there and a bunch of hordes show up.
You know, I smell a great marketing opportunity from Panda Express. If you can't get out of your WoW gaming, you need some food to go, Panda Express. And you can order through Pandaria, like, you have to go somewhere in the game, and you have to go basically to a little hut that's like a little fast food counter, and you order through there.
I'm surprised they haven't figured that out yet. I feel like that's a missed opportunity for Blizzard, now that I'm thinking about it. And not just Panda Express, just any kind of like pizza. Order a pizza from within the game.
That would be awesome. Like a Domino's. Like Domino's is like some great temple that you go into.
They've got
credit
card, right? They've already verified that you're a paying customer.
They know where you live.
They can just charge it to your Blizzard account. would be an in-game purchase. Maybe you could even pay with WoW gold.
That would be interesting. I mean, how many hours would you need to put? Like, I don't know what the conversion rate. I mean, at some point, I knew there was one for all the gold farmers.
There's a few sites that track that sort of thing. It makes more sense in something like Diablo 3, which, by the way, comes out in like 13 days.
Actually
having an auction house where you can exchange real money for gold and essentially buy things on the auction house for real money and vice versa, sell things on the auction house for real money.
That's kind of cool. I don't know why, it kind of reminds me of the episode of The Simpsons where the family goes to Itchy and Scratchy Land, and they go, Homer passes the first souvenir shack and says, hey, would you like to buy some Itchy and Scratchy dollars? It's like, what are those? Well, it's just like real dollars, just because they're itchy and scratchy, you can buy anything in the store. So Homer gets like $100 and gets $100 worth of itchy and scratchy dollars. He goes to buy something, and then the store has a giant sign that says, we do not take itchy and scratchy bucks. And it's just like, you got screwed.
You know, it's interesting. We had a guy on Triangulation who's the former head of Intuit, former head of PayPal. He's now starting his own online finance company. And we were talking about currencies. And he says all currency is going to be online eventually, and it's going to be backed by governments. There will be alternative currencies like Facebook credits and those sorts of things, but he doesn't think that those will dominate.
It will. It the thing with currency is it needs to have the backing of the national government in order to make it legal tender. So
I thought it needed to be valuable.
Well, for example, if I go pay off someone, say someone's selling a box of crackers in a store and he wants $5 for it. I go over and I give him $10, he gives me $5 change. I've purchased. If I try to go in there and give him a giant gold brick, it's like, I'll give you this gold bullion. He could say, I won't accept that as payment.
Sure. Like, he could say, I don't accept the dollars as payment too.
There has been cases about that you have to accept that as payment. As a legally issued. Now he doesn't have to serve you. He has the right to refuse service.
Uh-huh.
But if your thing is, I can't take that because that's a dollar. No, you have to take it.
So we have thug backed currency.
Yes, it's called the police, the law enforcement.
We're not on the gold standard. We're on the law enforcement standard.
We've been off the gold standard since the late 70s.
Well, yeah, I know, but I'm just saying we're on the law enforcement standard.
Yes.
You will accept this imaginary money because we say so, or you'll go to jail.
Yes, unless you make up another reason. Like, I don't want to sell it to you. It's one thing to say, I don't want to sell it to you. It's another thing, it's like, I won't accept.
Well, how can you prove that you're not selling it to him because
of the money? You know, that raises a host of other issues. You know, you can nitpick it all day, but it is legal currency and.
So do you think currency is a really fascinating thing because it's one of those oversimplified topics that people think, well, it's obvious we need a gold-backed currency. Your currency needs to be backed by something valuable or nobody will use it. And that's the problem with finances today. That is way oversimplified. In fact, there's no reason that gold is valuable except that we all agreed that it's valuable. It's not the fact that we can use it for things. Yes. You know, that makes it valuable. It's that we decided we like it. And so essentially what we've done is say, you know what, let's get rid of the we like it intermediary here and just agree that if the government controls the value of something, it won't get out too far out of hand. And we'll all agree that $10, imaginary dollars, is you know, it's just accounting. It's like it's like units. It's like anything else. Like, oh, you know what? Instead of barter system, I'm gonna give you this pig, and you just pretend to give me 10 units, and then I'll go change those for essentially the equivalent of a pig's worth of something else.
Yeah.
I guess where I'm going with this is Bitcoin is an effort to create a currency that has value because of its rarity, because you have to do so many cycles on a processor to create one, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe that's the wrong way to go about it. Maybe it shouldn't be about Bitcoin making something that's rare, because we don't really care about rare. And Bitcoin itself isn't really worth anything unless we agree to it. It's the enforcement. And I guess there's an enforcement aspect to Bitcoin as well, because it has to pass a hashtag and it has to be validated and all of that. do we need a central, I guess where I'm going with this in the end is, do we need a central authority to back a currency, or could we have a distributed currency like Bitcoin that actually still works because it's enforced?
You need some sort of government guarantee to say that if I bring 10 bucks.
Does that
have
to be government?
Well, whatever. It has to be an entity that everyone will agree to, abide to the terms. I mean, in so much that someone gives you like 10 Bitcoins, like, oh, I'm not taking Bitcoins for the stuff I'm selling. I mean, and that's the key. If you can't use it to purchase goods and services as seamlessly as you do with, you know, nationally denominated currency, dollars, pounds, or whatever, it's not that good to you. It's not very useful to you. If you go into a hardware store that only accepts Bitcoins, sure, maybe, but if you want to go buy something to eat and it doesn't take Bitcoins, well, you know, then it becomes one of those kind of in-store coupons.
You don't
like Target
think we could come to a point where society agrees to all accept something like Bitcoins?
Yeah.
And it just becomes the standard. Do you think we have to have an entity enforcing its acceptance?
Yes. Yes, I think you do. I think you need I wouldn't say protection, but some sort of legal framework that gets people to accept it. I mean, you know, it was one of the big hurdles for euro adoption, the currency, and they put a time limit on how on whether or not like Deutsche Marks and francs and liras and all that would stay solvent before, you know, no one would accept them any longer. You know, I think it was a couple of years, maybe 3 years.
And we saw with the European crisis a lot of people reaching for the gun of getting out of the euro as a way to protect themselves, because they say, well, if Greece depreciates the euro, I don't want to have the euro in Greece anymore. Let's have Greece just, you know, start issuing its own currency anymore and stop dragging down the euro. Or Greece saying, you know, it'll be a lot easier to handle our currency if we can devalue it. We can't devalue the euro. But it just showed the strength of the euro to me, which is it doesn't allow itself to be easily manipulated. It's going to reflect the market conditions, whether we want those market conditions to be true or not. Do you think we should have a universal currency? Could we have a universal currency? Because we don't have a universal enforcement, and I don't think anybody really wants to have a universal government at this point.
Well, so this goes back to the big conspiracy one world government theory. One of the big sticking points and all that is the issuance of some sort of universal currency.
Right.
Because that's one way to kind of entrap people into the system. For example, when NAFTA was being negotiated, there was conspiracy theorists saying we're going to all move to the Amero, which would combine Canadian, American, and Mexican currencies into this new currency, either U.S. dollar, Canadian dollar, or Mexican peso. It would be the Amero. And for a lot of people, I mean, being able to issue out your own currency is a point of national pride, especially for countries that aren't near the developing end of the spectrum. But it also allows that group, that country, that state, or whatever, to have some control over the economics.
But not a free market control. It actually allows them to manipulate markets.
Well, and that's the thing with the euro, is that it's being manipulated. The euro is being manipulated by the stronger economies that are in the euro at the expense, depending on who you talk to.
But what they're running into with Greece is they can't manipulate Greece's part of the euro. It's either manipulated for everybody or nobody. And the United States is like that. We can't manipulate the dollar for California to help California get out of its debt.
It's one of those catch-22s. I mean, the euro is different in that there is no central, you know, central political consensus. Because, I mean, there's one thing with the U.S. We have a federal government that everyone...
We have a strong central government, right.
As opposed to the euro, which is almost a consensual agreement, where you have a supposedly independent bank issuing.
Right, but you don't... The European Parliament is not the equivalent of the U.S. Congress or the White House.
Exactly. And so, you know, there are different elements at play. I mean, ultimately, I can see a cashless society. But I think that currency will have to be underwritten by some sort of national, supranational organization. it is a common theme with metal bugs, people who hoard gold, silver, platinum, and stuff. It's like, well, at the end of the world, that's the only thing we're going to be able to trade if you can't take paper money. And I say to them, can you eat it? Can you drink it? Can you build a house out of it? In the event that everything goes Mad Max and we're all driving around looking for our next tank of gas, what's gonna count as currency will be ammunition, because that's the most valuable piece of something you can own. Ammunition. Being able to, people will collect casings and they will sell them back to you at a highly marked up rate. It's very interesting because, I mean, as you've noted, I mean, gold only has its value because of its perceived historical value. You know, in some cultures, it wasn't even gold. I think in Mesoamerican cultures, jade was considered to be the at the apex of what was considered valuable. I believe it was said that one of the South American empires that were sacked by the Spanish conquistadors, like, oh, glad they only found out about the gold, but not the jade. Because to them, jade was a lot more valuable. And so, you know, maybe we'll come to a point where something else that will be deemed to be incredibly valuable will come to market. I mean,
well, that brings you to the argument for Bitcoin, right? Because you said, like, well, maybe we'll have a cashless society. Maybe we'll go entirely digital and we're just keeping track. And maybe we start to, it starts to not matter what currency it's in, because it's easily convertible in your digital balance to whatever currency you want. And so currency starts to become irrelevant, at which case, what is it backed by? And what is the enforcement? And Bitcoin provides an answer to that. It says it's you know, it's enforced by its rarity, by its verifiability, and it's a distributed enforcement. I'm not saying that I believe that that's easily the answer there, but it does start to eventually make sense again in that distant future. It may not make sense right now because we're not ready for it yet.
I think
national currencies will tend to wither, because they'll become essentially meaningless when you can just click a button on your bank balance and it's like, oh, I'll show it to you in euros, I'll show it to you in dollars, I'll show you to whatever. And we start to realize, well, wait a minute, these other national currencies are just meant to hide the real value of our money. Let's all standardize on Facebook credits.
And, you know, and ultimately, I mean, this is why a sovereign government's guarantee is so valuable, because, for example, if you had currency from a country that no longer exists, for example, Confederate dollars during the American Civil War.
Great example,
The Confederacy created Confederate dollars. Worthless today. You go and try to buy a six-pack of soda with it. People's like, what the hell is this? Like, I'm not going to take that. People need to have confidence. If people have confidence in the government that's issuing the currency, it's like, okay, I'll take it, because I know the U.S. government, at least for now, the U.S. government won't renege.
Well, you know, and the downside is that the governments can then manipulate those currencies which they control, which is great for the governments.
Which is what's happening right now.
It's not great for the rest of us. Is it a better idea to have an independent agency, a non-governmental organization that handles currency, and that's its only job, and it's accountable, and it's set up, you know, in a way that it's transparent, and its only job is to maintain the backing of a currency that can be used by anyone?
I mean, you know, it's interesting, because anything that deals with money is automatically politicized. I mean, the IMF is a clear example,
sure,
where you know who gets to control or sit on the board is of utmost importance.
And the U.S. always gets to appoint the World Bank head. And Europe always gets to appoint the IMF head.
And so what you...
I may have that reversed. I can't remember.
I think it's a very pleasant thought to think that you could have this kind of standalone, you know, outside of any sort of national government's control. But when you really get down to brass tacks, no. I mean, that's not what's going to happen. It will be politicized. There will be various elements jockeying for play. For example, China wanted to remove currency. Currently, the U.S. enjoys world currency reserve status, which is why they can do certain things with the U.S. dollar. No other country can get away with their currency. And countries like China and Brazil are thinking of, well, what if we just ditch the greenback as the world's reserve currency and come up with a basket of currencies that incorporated like the British real, or not the Brazilian real, the Chinese yuan, euros, you know, where you wouldn't have everything in one kind of basket. But you come back to the same issue, is that whether or not people will have confidence in any of that in order to exchange. And that's kind of, and this is really what underpins the, I know it's scary, underpins the entire economic system in around the planet is confidence. If I don't have confidence in the government bonds issued by Greece, I'm not going to buy them. If well, I'm not.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. And you're saying it's not easy to make an independent authority that wouldn't be bossed around by somebody.
Hey, but
I don't think it's impossible. It's certainly
very difficult.
You have to have the right sociological conditions for it to happen. And I don't think we have those right now, frankly.
I think if the population withered down to like 100 million, global population withered down to 100 million, you probably get away with it.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I've been thinking about that a lot lately in relation to this novel idea I've had, that when the population starts to decline, nations start to decline.
Oh, yeah.
And the importance of local becomes much greater. And the cooperation of local communities across the planet with each other, regardless of national boundaries.
I mean, it's almost kind of not unthinkable, but you know, difficult to grasp. If you think at one point in human history, the entire population of New York City was the entire population of the planet.
Sure.
Like a human population. And so, as time moves on and things cycle through, we could very well find ourselves maybe 100, maybe 1,000 years in the future. We're at a much smaller population. You could probably get away with some issuing like the global, you know, the world currency or the world O or whatever you'd like to call it.
The objections to any, whenever you say world anything is immediately like, well, we don't want them to have sovereignty over us. And I always find that laughable because I'm like, well, you're allowing someone to have sovereignty over you now. Why is this group having sovereignty over you in this location better than someone having sovereignty over you from another location? It's all about how you set up these governments. It's not about the fact that there is a world government. A world government could be imagined that works very well. It's just that everybody wants to immediately imagine that it's going to work horribly. And that, and you know, frankly, go slow. Let's not rush to a world government or a world currency. But I don't privilege the fact that the yahoos who happen to be born near me are somehow better at doing things than the yahoos who happen to be born halfway across the world. I think that humanity is much too fragile to fight against itself like that.
I think ultimately what you run into is just a cultural schism. I mean, there is enough difference in many of the world's cultures, even ones that are similar, say like between Canada and the United States, where that whole idea is an anathema. People just don't want to do it. I'm not of that people. How dare you decide that we live under those rules?
Yeah.
And you know, and this is all kind of evolved from the way humans interact through tribalism and the rest of the stuff that we've always talked about. You will only really get around it when the population comes down. I mean, when the world's population of people is under 100 million, I think it will be a lot more feasible than say, you know, you could break up the United States with 315 million plus people in this country, or at least estimated. You could very well carve like 5 or 6 separate countries out of it. And I know you've written a book Boiling Point that you've written, as well as a couple of other sci-fi authors who've also, you know, thought about the whole idea of separating, you know, the U.S. into its regional constituent parts, where like-minded individuals would rule under a government they all approved of. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, human psychology is a very tricky thing. I mean, things that make us tick are the most irrational things. It's counterproductive for us to do a lot of things that we do. We smoke, even though we know that it's bad for us. We drink. We know that eating certain foods or having certain lifestyles, like a sedentary lifestyle, leads to a shorter lifestyle. But we enjoy it. I mean, we derive our need to derive pleasure is greater than any kind of long-term down-the-road thinking. I don't see that changing anytime soon. Perhaps maybe one of us in these 7+ billion human souls will have you know, fall on the idea that will that'll allow humanity to be as one. But outside of Woodstock, I don't think it's that.
Well, we should take a break and thank our sponsor, Audible. Without Audible, you wouldn't be able to listen to amazing books while you drive around. In fact, Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring fiction, nonfiction, many versions of New York Times bestsellers. And listeners of East Meets West get a free audiobook if they try out the service. I was just looking around to see if there's some good science books, and man, there are some good science books. Who's in Charge? Free Will and the Science of the Brain by Michael Gazzaniga, leading cognitive neuroscientist. A provocative argument against the belief that our lives are wholly determined by physical processes. Writing with what Steven Pinker called trademark wit and lack of pretension, Gazzaniga asserts that responsibility is found not in brains, but in how people interact.
I would get that book. I might get it for the flight over.
That's a great, it's a great book. And it'll cost you $19.59. Or if you go to audiblepodcast.com/east, you can get it for free when you try out Audible. And it's
awesome.
It's only 8 hours and 5 minutes.
You know, that will get me through 1.5 flights.
That's right. That'll get you. I mean, in fact, if you do a little reading of the Sky Mall, you know, at takeoff and landing, probably fill up the rest of the time pretty nicely. Who's in Charge? Free Will and the Science of the Brain by Michael Gazzaniga, narrated by Pete Larkin. Check it out. That's just one of the many books you could try. If you're like, I don't want that one, get another one. Go to audiblepodcast.com/east and try them out. Well, Mr. Chang, I think we've come to the end of our show today.
Oh, I got to put my sweater vest back on.
Yep. Change your shoes, put on your sweater vest, head out the door to meet Mr. McFeely.
You know, I've always wondered it's a slight diversion. When I was a kid, I seriously fantasized of having a house just like that house.
Yeah.
Like, it had a little train in it. It's like, where do you go to the bathroom, take a shower, and, you know, where do you cook? It's like, it's kind of cool. Like, that's what my clubhouse would look like.
It's a nice little place. I always wondered why he left so soon after he
It's like, what? Well, I didn't say, it's like, isn't that your home? Who looks after your fish when you're gone?
Feed
like,
the fish.
Where do you go?
What do you do all day? Well, we can't answer that, but maybe you can. Subbrilliant.com/EMW is the place to go to leave feedback. Thanks to George Corley of Conlang, constructed language expert, and leave in some good reactions to last week's episode. Post them up there, subbrilliant.com/EMW. Thanks for watching or listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.